microloans, microfinance, small loans. Supposed to help people in poverty. It was an idea that it would help them become entrepreneurs and own their own businesses. It would also protect the poor from big banks that had taken advantage of them in the past. But my next guest says the idea of microfinance is probably a better deal than the actual reality of microfinance. Neil McFarquhar is the United Nations Bureau Chief for our partner, the New York Times, and author of The Media Relations Department of Hezbollah Wishes You a Happy Birthday. Neil's the author of an article in Today's Times in which he talks about issues that keep the reality of microcredit from obtaining its ideal. We're also joined by Alex Counts, the president and CEO of Grameen Foundation. It's a sister organization to the well-known Grameen Bank that's widely credited with creating the modern microfinance industry. Good morning. Neil, can you explain what you call the idea of microfinance?
Well, the idea is that you give small loans, I mean, as low as $30 or so, to somebody who doesn't have any collateral, doesn't really own anything, to start some kind of business. You know, like the original founder, Muhammad Yunus, gave it to basket weavers, and he gave small loans, and it's over a short period of time, 8 months, a year. And the idea, of course, was that they would have low interest. You weren't really trying to make a profit over it, so that people could pay it back in small increments, and then they would pull themselves out of poverty. But, of course, the idea has not quite been matched by the reality.
Well, what you talk about in your article is the fact that there are banks, as you say, taking advantage of these microloans to charge interest rates as high as 100% or more on these tiny loans.
It's, you know, the number of people that are sort of exploiting the poor, it's probably only between, you know, somewhere under 10%, experts say, of all microfinance institutions. But what happened is it sort of, you know, it started as a charity effort, and then 10 years ago, more and more private institutions started to get into it. And then there was a small microfinance called Comportamos in Mexico that in 2007 made a, you know, public offering of stock, and they raised over $400 million. And, of course, that opened the eyes of a lot of banks and financial institutions. And so there's been a gradual drift of them into the sector, and it's now 60% controlled by them.
Alex Counts of the Grameen Foundation, explain to me what the regulation is on microfinance. Are there any kind of limitations for these loans that are intended to help poor people? I mean, Alex, Neil listens to an article, loans in Mexico that are 125% annual rate.
Sure. The regulations vary by country. There's, you know, kind of still a relatively new phenomenon, and the regulators are trying to catch up to it and not over-regulated or under-regulated. I have to say, though, I found this article quite problematic and really misleading, in particular how it treated the interest rates and the impacts of microfinance. Very much oversimplified a complicated series of issues.
Okay, so in the interest of time, try to make it simple for me. In what way was it misleading? What are we missing?
I think the best studies of it, I'm not sure if the author had access to this, sustainable MFIs charge on average about 26% interest. The percentage who pay the rates cited in the article are less than 1% of clients right now. The banks really have always ignored the poor and frankly still do, though some of them lend to the MFIs that are lending to the poor, but they're not really a retail face serving the poor now or at all. And the interest rates, in fact, have been coming down from microfinance loans at about a rate of 2.5% per year in recent years. And that's, you know, really led by a lot of the efficiency investments and breakthroughs of groups like Grameen Bank and particularly leaders in the most mature markets like Bolivia, Bangladesh, and India. So, and lastly, the impact of microfinance has been studied for the past 20 years. And whatever the rates may be, the evidence seems to show that most clients are benefiting, if modestly, in some cases, from, in fact, the quotation in the article, the woman, even in a high-interest case, is saying that her life is improving.
Neil, what's your response to that?
I make all those points. I mean, I said that they're coming down. And it's groups like the Grameen Foundation that some people find problematic because there's you know, one of the article points out there's an organization called LAPO in Nigeria that has been, you know, charging high interest rates, and they say their costs are high, and people like the Grameen Foundation and big banks like Deutsche Bank, they support them, and, you know, there's a lot of people like the Muhammad Yunus's who think that these outside foundations don't put enough pressure on the players who are charging high interest rates to bring them down.
Alex, is it the responsibility of the Grameen Foundation and organizations like yours to put pressure on them to reduce fees and interest rates?
Well, what we've been trying to do all along is to try to, you know, when the public donor support of microfinance started to evaporate about 10 years ago, when a lot of the aid money started going to Iraq and Afghanistan, I think the private groups like us tried to step in and invest in efficiency improvements that would allow these groups, many of which wanted to lower their interest rates, but didn't have any kind of donor support to do so. And in fact, we see that most of the groups we've been working with, in part because of our assistance, have been able to lower their rates and be part of this global trend, which, again, doesn't really come through much at all in the article. I also think that, you know, the standard in the article about that microfinance didn't single-handedly save the world is really quite misleading and frankly ridiculous. But if you actually look at the evidence of what's claimed, which is that it allows people to improve their economic standing slowly but surely to that standard, microfinance succeeds.
Well, Neil, I mean, your claims in your article, you do paint a kind of complicated picture.
It is a complicated picture, but basically I think that it's sold. You know, if you go on some of these websites like Micro Place and get people to invest in them, you know, the headline is End Poverty. And basically what the social scientists are saying is that experts tend to oversell it. Yes, it helps alleviate some of the worst, you know, pitfalls of poverty, but not everybody is an entrepreneur waiting to be discovered.
Neil McFarquhar, the United Nations Bureau Chief for our partner, The New York Times. His article appears in the paper today. Alex Counts is the president and CEO of Grameen Foundation, a nonprofit focused on enabling the poor.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, the New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for the New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.